Hey, just wanted to drop a note. I'm going to be talking a few different times in the upcoming months, and I think there's still some tickets available for the Rocky Mountain Resellers Conference out in Denver, Rocky Mountain. It's in beginning of June. And then right after that, I'm going to be at the Bustproof Labs conference in Dayton, Ohio. And there's, I think, tickets still available for that too. So if you're interested in Rocky Mountain, reach out to Paul Witter. Right on Facebook. I'll have a link on this episode. But Paul Witter, Rocky Mountain, and tell him I sent you. Or Greg Murphy for the Bustproof Business Labs conference. And I'm going to be speaking at both of them. I'd love to meet you face to face. Take care. I was talking to Karen Locker the other day from Solutions for E-Commerce. We all know she's a sponsor of my show. She pays me. I don't want to hide that, right? The other thing she reminded me, though, is that if you sign up for her service through my link, you get $50 off, right? You knew that. I forgot that she offers an inventory health assessment. I'm like, Karen, I probably should be talking about that valuable service. She's going to take a look through your inventory and help you figure it out. They're going to take care of your suppressed listings. You're tired of having stranded inventory? Is inventory getting lost? When's the last time you looked at your shipments to get them reconciled? How about refunds? Has that happened? Well, Karen takes care of all that for me. She's been doing it for almost 2 years. I pay the same rate you do, but I'm very, very pleased with the service. I had two guys, two well-known guys in the area reach out to me saying, hey, you've been with her. Are you satisfied? I'm perfectly satisfied. And again, I can message her. I get the services I need. So it's Solutions for E-Commerce. The only way you're going to get that deal is using my code MOMENTUM. I have a link on my website. You have to go there. If you're thinking about outsourcing that piece of your business, get your inventory looked at.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 199, Peter Kearns. 199, isn't that crazy? Man, time flies. Well, I like this guy. I saw him speak at Jeff Cohen's Seller Labs Resonate Conference, and I was like, all right, this dude knows his stuff. I took a liking to him immediately. What was exciting to me was he was talking accounting speak in some ways. He was talking about profitability and a strategy for each ASIN that you own or, you know, carry. And I've not heard a lot of people talking about that, but it's so important. So basically, you know, not going wide, just going deep because you know your product. You know you have a plan for that product all the way through. And I really connected with him, and I really think a lot of him. And what's cool is he's going to be out at the Rocky Mountain Conference coming up June 2nd and 3rd. And I believe there are a few tickets left, so I'm pitching it. I don't benefit in any way other than getting to meet you. And I really hope you come and see us out at Rocky Mountain June 2nd and 3rd. I'll have a link on this episode if you're interested. Let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. I'm very, very excited about today's guest because I just got to see him speak. I guess it's been about 2 weeks, and I was sitting there like, all right, this dude knows what he's talking about. And when I found out his background and realized that him and I are kindred spirits in some ways, we actually know the same people outside of our little Amazon, eBay businesses, we really hit it off, and I'm so impressed, and I'm just so lucky to have Peter Kearns on. Welcome, Peter.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you because I remember you were when you were speaking at Resonate, Jeff Cohen and Brandon Checkitz from Seller Labs had you at the Resonate conference. I sat there and I'm like, oh man, I got to follow this guy. And I'm like, oh man, I better step it up a notch. But I mean, clearly, you're very comfortable in the Amazon knowledge world. And I assume, I'm going to stretch to figure out that this didn't come by accident because you worked for Amazon. So I think that makes it a little easier. But before we go there, I want to go back because I want to hear about this journalism side of you. So way back.
Sure.
Take me back.
Way, way back. So take you back. I won't go back all the way, but we'll go back like 2011-ish. I was in the newspaper industry. I was absolutely in love with the newspaper industry. I used to joke that I had ink in my veins instead of blood. I saw the movie All the President's Men when I was in college, and I was like, that's it. I want to be the next Woodstein. And So I started writing. I was a photographer, and I'm not a very good writer. I'm good enough, but certainly not at the level that one needs to be a reporter. I'm a pretty good photographer. But I realized that staying in that photographic editorial space was not in my future if I was going to make any money.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So I decided to jump to the other side, if you will, and I went into the advertising aspects of the newspaper business. So I started advertising sales and management, and I absolutely loved it. It was fantastic. And then I was at the Seattle Times. That was the last place that I was at in the newspaper industry. And in early 2011, I realized that the newspaper industry was going in a direction that I just wasn't comfortable with. And I started to kind of do some soul searching. Where am I going to go? What am I going to do? And I thought, oh, I could go back to school. Maybe I should get into some sort of other industry. And then it really became apparent to me that what I wanted to do was go work at Amazon. Literally outside my office window was a gigantic hole in the ground where Amazon was building yet another one of its offices.
Hold on a second.
The South Lake Union.
You got to get me here a second. So while you were working as a reporter and all the photographer, you were in the Seattle area?
Or
part of it, right? So were you running into Amazon people in your kid's school, around town, at church, or around anywhere?
Friends getting jobs with Amazon, absolutely.
I mean, so it was everywhere, right? Yeah, it's literally everywhere. And had you ever thought about, before you had this epiphany, this moment where you saw where the newspaper business was going, did you ever say, ooh, that's a place I'd like to work? Or was it ever even on your mind?
It actually was on my mind. There were many days, in the recession, 2008, 2009, 2010, there were many days where I was a little nervous. Am I going to come to work today and be laid off because sales are down? And I thought to myself, what am I going to do? And I always said, I guess I could start selling on Amazon.
So you were going to be a seller. You weren't going to go work for them in their corporate office in the PR, because that's what I would think you would be, right? With a journalism degree, with those skill sets, typically any large company, especially a giant behemoth like that, has a huge PR area, right?
Yep.
Giant PR departments. And typically what I've seen with guys with your background, they go into marketing or PR, period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do.
Yeah, exactly. And I had switched and I was in advertising sales.
Okay.
So I felt like the next place for me to go would be into ad sales in some capacity at Amazon.
Okay.
But during those first couple of years, I was really interested in the selling on Amazon aspect of it, partly because in my advertising space, I was working with a lot of retail businesses that were saying things to me like, newspaper, print, and online advertising isn't delivering what it used to be. What are the digital options that you have? And there were a lot of businesses that were actually talking about, selling on Amazon and how they had started selling on Amazon and how it was creating such a positive impact to their business.
Well, that's interesting. So in that market, in that town, Seattle's not that big of a town. Mm-hmm. There are businesses that are selling on Amazon, even though the thing is right across town?
Yep, absolutely. And at the time, I was doing major national advertising, so I was working with national retailers.
Okay, right. So they would be, for sure. Wow, that's crazy. So you're in both worlds in that scenario, really. You're seeing both sides of it. Every day, you're hearing that. So was it like, I mean, now that you look back at it, do you think it was meant to be?
Yes.
No matter what. I mean, that was what it was. It just had to happen the way it was, whatever it was meant to be.
I think that the universe works in strange ways, and everything that's occurred in the last 6 years, 7 years was absolutely meant to be to get me where I am exactly right now to be talking with you.
That's hilarious. You know, it's funny though. Like I interviewed Joy Packard, if you heard that name. She always says, one thing leads to another, Steve. One thing leads to another. And it really does. I mean, it really does seem to lead you towards this. I don't know you'd be as good as you are in the knowledge of this Amazon world had you not been there, right? Because you get to see the other side of it and you understand the retailer's perspective. Because it's a big deal. When you worked at Amazon, I'm sure there are people there that probably never worked anywhere else. So they lacked perspective. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's bad for us sellers, right? If they don't have our perspective, that really affects us, because they're like, well, why don't they just do this? Well, geez, it's not that easy. I mean, there's these outside influences, right? Yep. Okay, so you decided to go and apply for what job to do, or were you just starting to sell on your own?
So I never started selling on my own. Well, actually, that's not true. I did start selling on my own, but not until I was actually at Amazon.
Oh, So that's allowed? Yes. Is that allowed?
Yeah, it is, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Very cool.
So what happened was in 2011, I start to interview, and I was actually I interviewed with the team, the Amazon local team. It was Amazon's answer to Groupon. And I thought to myself, oh man, I don't want to be in the daily deal space. This just sounds, you know, not really what I want to do. But I knew that I could get on and be really successful at it. And then I wanted to transition after my first year to the seller services team, because that's where I wanted to go. I really, I have a strong retail background, both, you know, being in retail and then also with the advertising and marketing, with working with a lot of brands and working with a lot of big retail stores. I really wanted to go into that space because I really loved retail and I'm a big shopper.
Well, explain to us what that is. So, because you're going to use jargon that we aren't going to be too familiar, not everyone's going to be familiar with.
Well, if you're a seller on Amazon, then you are in the seller services space.
Okay. All right. So you service third-party sellers.
Yeah. So that's what the seller services team does.
Okay. Third-party sellers, not necessarily big brands, or might be big brands.
Both. All of it. Big brands, big box. I mean, everything in the Amazon marketplace is the third-party seller world.
And so it's not Amazon buying. You weren't buying glass. I'm looking at the glass of water on my desk. You weren't buying glasses from some particular glass manufacturer to sell on Amazon. That's a different division.
That's correct. That's okay. The retail team.
Okay,
Amazon retail would be buying it.
Okay, they would buy it, and they would be the sellers for themselves, and they manage them. Okay, so you're representing, though, you could be Toys R Us all the way down to little old Steve.
Absolutely. And it's interesting you mentioned Toys R Us, because there's a bit of a history with Amazon and Toys R Us in their marketplace.
Oh, so, well, you can't just drop that and walk past it, Peter. I mean, you gotta follow through on it. And you can't do that, man.
It's just
the short version.
Well, I wasn't involved with this. It was way before I was even at Amazon. It's been in a couple of books and stuff out there. But I don't, you know, I believe Toys R Us launched as a third-party seller on Amazon, and it wasn't the best situation for them, and it didn't end well, from my understanding.
Okay, all right. And you could leave that one then, because that's not as fun. I remember the one I thought you were talking about was where they didn't have enough toys to go sell Amazon employees,
sure.
And they had to go buy them at Toys R Us or something like that. I remember that story.
Yeah, and that's the retail team, though. That's not a third-party seller.
Right, right. Okay.
And the retail team, yeah, in the beginning, I've heard lots of stories where the retail team didn't have enough products, and so they would either go to Toys R Us for Christmas to make sure that they were buying them and that these orders could be fulfilled. I also heard stories of where they bought thousands of iPods at retail, and then, the delivery was late or something like that, and so they were sitting on all these retail, on all these iPods and stuff.
Ooh.
So. It's really interesting. I mean, Amazon, it's a testament to what Amazon is all about, and that's making sure that they have just an amazing shopping experience, that the customer experience is awesome, and they'll do whatever they need to do to make sure that that happens.
And that means lose money sometimes, because it's a big picture thing, right? They're looking at the long game.
Absolutely.
Hmm. Okay, so you went there to work at Seller Services.
So what happened was I was interviewing with the Amazon local team, and it was brand new team, and they said, hey, we'd love to hire you, but everything's on hold since it's a brand new team, and we'll get back to you in the next couple of months.
Months.
And I thought to myself, well, that doesn't sound very good. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you're Amazon. I just read on the cover of the Seattle Times that you're hiring, like, you know, 3,000 people. There must be something else. And so my recruiter said, well, there is. What about our seller services team? And then I said, you mean – where I get to contact retailers or brands and recruit them on to sell their products on the Amazon marketplace. And she laughed and she said, yes, it sounds like you're familiar with this. And I said, I'm very familiar with it. I would love to do that. So then I had to go through an interview all over again. Amazon's interviewing process is a bit rigorous. It's kind of exciting, but it's also very intimidating. But so I had to go through and do it again. And then I got the job, and my first day at Amazon was Cyber Monday 2011.
Hey, let me ask you a question before we go there.
Yeah.
Since you were selling ad services from traditional, you know, old media, and what was trying to evolve into new media, right? I mean, I'm sure Seattle Times had a digital, you know, selling stuff at that time, right? They were trying to. And
yes.
Then you were now out selling retailers, hey, here's why you need to go out of those markets. You need to be here because this is where the eyeballs are.
Mm-hmm.
Did you mentally already make that transition? I think you kind of alluded to it, but did you mentally already make that transition, or did you still have a little bit in you?
No, I had made that transition.
Huh. Did you personally make that transition in your head too? I
yes,
wonder that.
Absolutely.
Okay, you did.
I, you know, one of the things is that I've always prided myself on really becoming, you know, that trusted advisor with my clients. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, you know, sound cliche, but I'm not afraid to say this isn't working. You should stop spending your money with whatever it is that I was representing. You know, if an advertising program wasn't working, then I would be the first to say, I don't think this is working. I don't think it's getting the results that you need to get. And I had started to see the decrease in effectiveness in advertising with newspapers. And so I had made that transition in my head already.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. I'm sure that wasn't popular, but it, you know what? It kind of led you where you are, right? You saw it, you went, got there. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you, you start on Cyber Monday and it's nice and quiet, right? Nice and easy. You're getting a lot of guidance. A lot of people are just sitting around doing nothing.
It was actually pretty, I mean, it was kind of a regular day. I thought it would be a little bit more, you know, frantic and exciting, but, at that point for Amazon, and that team, you know, the work had already been done.
Yeah. That's, I was going to say, that's the lesson, right?
Yeah.
The work was
exactly.
done. How far before, right? Probably weeks and months, in some cases months,
exactly.
but probably some even weeks before. And that's probably a great lesson right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everyone, you know, the preparation had been done, probably started in July, as early as July. And so for the third party sellers that were up and running already, they were on autopilot in many regards. And so there wasn't anything that you could be doing that particular day. So, but I remember it very clearly because I thought it was going to be one of these, you know, kind of like all hands on deck kind of days. And it really wasn't. It was really kind of, I was kind of disappointed, actually.
Well, my bet is really in years gone by, they were, right? I'm sure they,
but,
you know, they matured their way through. I'm sure they all have war stories. Oh, Peter, you don't remember what it was like when we walked, you know, carried our iPods, 2 feet of snow uphill both ways, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I was bringing with me that newsroom mentality where, you know, a breaking story, a big day and a lot of energy and everything like that. And so I was kind of thinking that there might be that kind of excitement, but there wasn't, but that's okay.
You didn't have regret?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
So you were there.
Kind of funny, though, because my office from the Seattle Times actually was across the street from my current building or the building I worked at Amazon.
All right. Let's be truthful. I want honest truth. I'm asking you to be honestly true.
Honest.
Did you tell them they're number one with your middle finger? Did you ever? Come on. Look it out the window. Did you do it?
I did not. No, I did not.
You thought about it, though.
No, not really. No,
no.
I have a good
they were a good company. Very good company.
Yeah.
It's just funny, you know, thinking about that. Okay. So you were there for 3.5 years and you learned a few things, didn't you? And you had the harder categories, now, you know, much more challenging, right? Health and beauty, grocery, baby, all nice and easy things. There's never any problems with them, is there?
No, never any problems.
What was it like when you started there for people getting ungated versus what it is now?
Well, when I started, those categories weren't gated.
Right. So anybody could come up and say, hey, I got some ointment. I'm going to sell it.
Absolutely. Anybody can just start listing a product. And in 2014 is when we gated the consumables categories. And it was a very interesting and very fun project that started off as a conversation of like, oh, I think we're going to do this over the next 8 months. And then it was, we're going to do this in the next 3 weeks.
What was the thinking then? Why was the gating? Because people, the liability, because people getting sick, because there were no controls, they couldn't control it, counterfeits, China, all the above?
You know, really what it comes down to is protecting that customer experience and making sure that all of the right tools and checks and balances are in place so that the customer is having a great shopping experience and that their safety is number one. And that they don't need to worry about the products that they're either eating, you know, ingesting or putting on their body, and that they can, that they know that they're buying a safe product from a safe distributor or retailer, and that it's you know, not expired and that it's okay.
Because up until that point, you really didn't know, right?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely. You weren't sure. I mean, you know, it wasn't like there was stuff that was going on that were like, ooh, we better do this because this is happening. It was more of a, we should probably look at this because we do want to be proactive about protecting the customer experience. Let's make sure that this is in place and let's do it quickly.
Hmm. You know, one of the things that you mentioned in your talk too, you had a slide up there that showed that you had 1,500 sellers. Was that over the years that you were there, or were you responsible for a division with 1,500 sellers, or I don't know what they call them, ranks or whatever it would be?
Sellers. Yeah. So that was an in-year, one-year goal for me and my team to recruit those sellers in 1 year to bring them on and get them selling on Amazon.
Okay. Okay. So you were trying to grow it by 1,500 sellers.
Correct.
Okay. And how many sellers did you and your team have in their wing to grow from?
You know, at the time there were thousands, and so lots of different sellers out there, lots of different retailers that we wanted to work with, small regional based retailers, small brands that we wanted to work with. So there were quite a bit, but we wanted to make sure that the ones that we were bringing on were the right ones, that had the right selection and had the right inventory that would help improve that customer experience by bringing the products that they were looking for.
Let me beat this a little bit more, because Andy Simons was just out at the hardware show, and he said, yeah, Amazon had a, they were recruiting there. They had big signups and stuff like that. How did they approach, what was the approach you went after this 1,500 sellers? How did that happen?
So this was, four or five. Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of funny. It was not very complicated. It was very easy. We'd find the website, pick up the phone and call them.
Hey, Steve, I'm from Amazon. I'd like you to sell your crap on my show, on my channel.
That's actually pretty close to it. Yeah. It would be very, very direct, very to the point. There was always a level of, I don't want to say arrogance, but there was definitely a level of confidence because we were Amazon, or, you know, on my team, I was Amazon. And so, you know, usually every single person would talk to us and we wouldn't have any problem either getting the owner or the CEO or some C-suite executive on the phone to have a dialogue with us about it.
What did you do with the companies that are, you know, mom and pop operations making birdhouses? Bad example, but it's what I can think of. They're making birdhouses, but they're popular. You saw it. You thought, hey, there's a market here. We want them. How did that conversation, the guy's like, geez, internet, we have a website. I didn't even know we had a website, right? I'm sure you ran into those people. How does that talk go?
You know, it usually would go, it would go one of two ways. They would either be incredibly excited to talk to us, or they would think that we were the competition and the enemy. And the ones that would see us as the competition and the enemy, those were the ones that were, very reluctant to start selling on Amazon, but they usually would agree to give it a try. Honestly, those smaller businesses, for a lot of them, it was absolutely life-changing, because they would suddenly go from this, you know, we're selling on our own retail website, or we're selling in our own region, and we don't want to do e-commerce, or we don't want to do Amazon because you're the competition. But then they would agree to it, and they would be tapping into this amazing customer base, and they would be tapping into a national or now global customer base. And so they would see sales coming in pretty quickly and relatively significant from what they were experiencing already.
Were you recruiting them to be FBA sellers?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you're recruiting them. Hey, send your birdhouses to us. We'll do the distribution. We're that silent team that takes care of you, you know, 24/7, 365.
Yeah.
It's a pretty compelling sale. I mean, it sounds like it would be a pretty easy sale.
It is, absolutely. And it's kind of fun because I've been running into sellers that I worked with when I was at Amazon. There was one
at Resonate. That's cool.
Who actually came up to me and was like, you helped us launch on Amazon, and this was a great story, and we ended up selling our business, and you know, things were fantastic. And then Jeff Cohen from Seller Labs introduced me to a seller last fall at a conference, and he said, "Wait a second, I know you." And he's like, "You're the guy that created the $4 million year business for us on Amazon," and gave me a hug. So
it's a good feeling.
It is. I've had the you know, Amazon Marketplace is definitely growing and changing. And so there are some of those stories that aren't as popular. I mean, I ran into a seller that I helped launch. I ran into her at a trade show, and she was really upset because her business was so successful that it got targeted by overseas counterfeit products, and her business was down 50% because of that. So as good as it can be, there are some challenges as well.
Well, that is a great segue, because now the new Peter Kearns could help that seller,
yes,
right?
You can
help them. So let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about how you evolve from Amazon into peterkearns.com. How is that for a pitch for you?
That sounds great. I love it.
I'll be right back. You've heard me talk a lot about private label, and Andy Slammons is back with a new free course. It's the Smart Private Label course. S stands for selecting a product. M, manufacture with the right supplier. So important. Amazing photos, keyword research, and listing preparation is the A. R stands for ranking your product to the first page of search. We all know how critical that is. And then T is taking your product to the top of Amazon and beyond. This is a free course. It's going to help you get that foundation to do your own private label productness. You want to work smarter. Get it smarter. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. Tell Andy I sent you. Told you the dude was smart. Liked him immediately. I love the plain speak. I love his connection with Amazon. And what's cool is at the end, I let him pitch his services. And again, I don't benefit, but I just think it's cool to be able to have a contact, somebody who I could reach out to, and now you could reach out to, that can help you navigate those channels. They do have their own language, and it's a big machine. Like he said, there's 2 million sellers that they're trying to deal with. Well, guess what? That makes them have to automate and have to get kind of mechanical about things. But that doesn't mean that they're not approachable. They are. There's a way to do it, and that's what he does. And I really see some value in it, hence the reason I wanted to make sure I got them on. So again, Rocky Mountain Conference coming up June 2nd and 3rd. If you don't have tickets, if you're on the fence, just go. It is an investment and not an expense. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Peter Kearns, and I'm beating him to death on the Amazon services stuff, but I appreciate the insight because I think the perspective is so strong for people. You know, I mean, it's funny. I've heard this from people. You know, they're like, oh, you know, they don't need the third-party sellers. But then, wait, here they're trying to recruit the third-party sellers, right? And so I'm sure there's a double-edged, you know, there's a fight, an internal struggle, right? Because they want to be, like you said, they ultimately want to get all the products that are ever made, all available to their customers within a day, right? That's what they want, ultimately.
A couple hours.
But there's that internal struggle, right? Do they sell it? Do they bring a seller on? I mean, so it's just an interesting battle, but I love the perspective. I just think it helps people understand that, you know, they're in business, period. They are in business to make money, aren't they? They will make money.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. Okay, so you were there. Life is good. And what happens?
Well, what happens is I actually, life is good, but, you know, maybe life can be better.
Oh, a better life. That should be a good phrase, a better life.
A better life. And so what happened?
Merch shirt.
Yes, exactly. We're in Seattle, obviously, because that's where Amazon is based. But my wife is from Missoula, Montana. And we were out there on vacation in spring of 2015, about 2 years ago. And we decided, as we were coming home, we were kind of thinking about, do we want to stay in Montana? We have a little boy, and do we want him to grow up in the city? I grew up in the heart of Seattle. I loved it. It's a very different city than it is that now than it was. And so we kind of were like, what do we want to do? Where do we want to live? And we're very strong believers in lifestyle and making sure that you know you're living the kind of life that you want to live, because we only have one. And so we decided to move from Seattle to Montana. And it was an interesting thing, because I was thinking like, I'm going to need to get a job in Missoula, and that could be challenging. And so we looked around for a little while, and it just wasn't quite happening. And so we just decided to bite the bullet and just say, we're going to move, and then we'll figure it out once we get there.
Whoa.
And yeah, exactly.
Wait,
and
so is your wife an adventurer too?
Absolutely.
Really? Wow.
She's born and raised Montana.
Oh, so she could survive anything. All right. I get it.
she's hardcore. I won't mess with her. So we decided to move. And I tell my boss at the time at Amazon, a great guy, one of the best bosses I've ever had. And he says, of course you're moving to Montana. You don't need to quit. You can telecommute. And I think, oh, this is amazing. I've won the lottery. I get to move to Montana and continue working for Amazon from Missoula. And it was a great, great thing. Everything was happening, except for there's one small little thing, in that Montana is the only non-at-will state in the union. So what that means is they can't fire me for any reason.
Really?
And so, yeah. So I was like, okay, well, so my very last day, my last day in the office was June 19th, Friday, June 19th. And I was, you know, I'd got all the stuff for my home office. I'd got my airfare for flying back in 2 weeks for, you know, the next meeting. You know, I was all ready to do this telecommuting thing. And on my very last day, my director, who's no longer at Amazon, comes in. He's like, hey, I need to talk to you. And he says, I'm so excited for your move to Montana. And I said, yeah, me too. And he says, but you know, you picked the worst state you could move to. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, well, it's the only non-at-will state in the union, and Amazon can't employ you because it's not an at-will state. So today's your last day.
Whoa.
And so this was kind of just thrown at me. I mean, literally. I mean, it's a Friday, and we're moving to Missoula on Sunday. You know, I've got the U-Haul coming, and I'm kind of like, oh, what am I going to do? I had a very, you know, a few four-letter words floated through my mind. And I just smiled. I said, okay, I understand. You know, I get it. I made the decision. It's cool. You know, I'm going to go talk to HR about my health insurance. No big deal. So Amazon was, you know, it was a very challenging situation because of that. But they were cool with me. And I had a vacation time and all that stuff. And so they were able to express this or extend that stuff out. And so I found myself, though, here I am in Montana. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to give myself a week to unpack some boxes. And then I'm going to start looking for a job.
Hey, what were you thinking though?
Gonna need a job.
I'm gonna pause there for a second, because you're, I guess, not quite middle age at that point, right? And you're thinking,
no.
What am I gonna do? I mean, everything I've done to this point, I've had, especially because you're coming from there, you just had incredible success.
Yeah.
Do you go back and doubt everything, your abilities, everything in the world? Like, what an idiot, you know? Or do you say, you know what? I've survived bigger than this. I married a Montana girl, for God's sake. She says, yeah. A man up and get going. Where do you go?
Yeah, of course. There are moments where I'm like, you know, WTF, I just left this amazing job, really well paying, great health insurance, you know, all of these things. And sure, of course, I'm human. Anybody's going to have those second doubts. I certainly had that while I was driving this U-Haul across, you know, I-90 going over, you know, Snoqualmie Pass. Yeah, I had those moments. But I also told myself that I had been through tougher things. And at the end of the day, we had chosen a lifestyle and we wanted to live here. And if I needed to go pull coffee, because I've done that, I'd go pull coffee.
Good for you. Good for you. You know,
if I need to go work at Home Depot, do that. Or in the back of my mind, like, okay, I'll light up my selling account again. Because at that time I'd actually had Amazon, I had started selling on Amazon and I had a pretty good business going.
You have a skill set. So that's transferable.
I felt like it.
Good
and,
for you.
And so I told myself to just take a couple of deep breaths, have some calming moments, give yourself some time to enjoy, you know, unboxing, being in Missoula, getting there, and enjoy the summer and don't worry about it for a little while. And so I became really confident with that decision. And I found myself, though, after a couple of weeks saying, you know, I want to work. I don't want to take the summer off. I think I'll start networking through LinkedIn. And I'd also, some interesting things had occurred. Literally the second day after I arrived in Missoula, I started getting emails through LinkedIn from sellers who I had worked with, who said, hey, I heard you left. I need to talk to you.
Yeah, because you've got the keys to the kingdom in your head, right? You have, you know, the inner workings behind the curtain. And right. That's valuable.
It is.
You know, it fascinates me how many ex-Amazon employees are creating businesses. Man, I run into them every day. Because you have developed a very specific set of skills. And that's a big machine. And it's funny because I was looking at what you, one of the services you offer is to help deal with that. I mean, I'm not trying to pitch your stuff. I think about that because that is hard to navigate. It's very difficult to navigate. And so anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. It just fascinates me because it's exactly what my mind went. I'm like, man, you have a skill set.
Yeah. And so it's true. And the thing that's interesting is that I didn't realize that. And at Amazon, I love my old team. I love what they're doing. I do think that there are oftentimes some disconnect in what Amazon's doing and what's really happening in the seller community. So I found myself quickly seeing the other side now that I was gone. And I didn't set out to start a consulting company. It just kind of happened. So what happened was I started thinking, okay, I need to get this job. And I've got these sellers who are kind of, I need to get a job. And I've got these sellers who are kind of contacting me. But I didn't think about starting my own consulting company. What I actually did was I contacted Victor Rosenman. He's the CEO and founder of FeedVisor. They're a third-party solution provider.
Right.
And I emailed him and I said, hey, Victor, I'm former Amazon seller services side. I see that you're hiring for some positions. I think maybe we should talk. You know, one small caveat, you're in Tel Aviv, Israel, and I'm in Missoula, Montana.
Yeah, that's a long commute for you, Victor, because I'm not going.
Exactly. Or at least I didn't think I was going. And so I emailed Victor, and 8 hours later, he responded. I was very, you know, excited at how quickly he responded. And then I had these great conversations with Victor and his team. And then about 10 days later, I find myself on a plane to Tel Aviv, Israel.
Uh-oh. He won.
It was great though, because I went to Israel for 2 days. It was, you know, 24 hours of travel for 2 days of being in Tel Aviv. It was amazing 2 days, but 24 hours of travel in, you know, 72 hour time frame is brutal. But I came back with this great opportunity to work for FeedVisor and help them launch their US offices here and kind of help them, you know, guide that direction for what they're doing. And you know, it was amazing. I had no idea that me deciding to leave Amazon, move to Montana, would open this door to international startup and telecommuting in this really cool space.
Well, and let's face it, the time that you're talking to them, international just really just starting to trickle, right? It's like a drip in a faucet. Right? Do they even have Amazon.eu as extended as they have it now?
Where it's at now? No.
Right. It was like one was servicing a whole bunch of countries at one point, right?
Yeah. In 2015, it was definitely in their wheel. I mean, it was definitely cruising.
Yeah. Right. And so you're at the beginning of that. That's a good time.
But the thing with FeedVisor, though, is they're in Israel and their client base is all the U.S. sellers. So it's me being in the U.S. was really great for them because it helped. With the time zone, I could work with sellers that were based on the West Coast, and you know, there wasn't that time difference between them working with sellers in Israel. So it was a really good fit.
Okay, so you take that on.
Now, I took that on.
Were you a contractor or were you an employee?
So I was a contractor for a little while.
Okay.
And then you know, they were launching their U.S. presence, and so I ended up helping them launch their U.S. office and their New York office. And then at that point, as soon as they had a U.S. president, I became an employee.
Okay.
And it was a lot of fun, except for I found myself commuting to Seattle from Montana via airplane.
right where you didn't want to go. We're there.
Literally, I was flying back and forth to Seattle almost, you know, 2-3 times a month, and it was very challenging. It's not why I moved. And I remember running into a former colleague at the Whole Foods across the street from our office, and she looks at me and she said, "Didn't I see you here last week?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "What are you doing? I thought you moved to Montana." And I said, "No, I did." She says, "Why are you commuting by airplane? That seems insane." And I thought to myself, "Yeah, it is a little bit insane." And so, last fall, after about a year, a little over a year with Feedvisor, I decided I would go and do Peter Kern's consulting.
Well, but you learned something there too. I mean, and you performed a service for them. I'm sure they were very happy and thrilled to have you there. But now you kind of get to do your own thing, right? Was it a confidence issue? I mean, I know you went to Montana very confident. But do you think that was in the back of your head, a little self-doubt? And then when you landed the Feedvisor thing, you got back, that doubt went away because, all right, yeah, I am valuable and boom, boom, boom. And maybe the second time it took you to say, wait a second. I think of that movie Taken, right, where I've developed a very specific set of skills, and you do not. Yeah, I mean, sure. Does that sound like you?
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually made that reference a couple of times.
That's true, though. I mean, it's hard, right? I mean, it you start to doubt yourself, but then you immediately landed, and you could. I mean, let's face it. If you decided to pull up the shingle and put it back in the briefcase, you could go get a job anywhere you want. You have a very specific set of skills. In the industry that's in its infancy. And so to know that and to accept it is hard. It is hard.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think definitely. I mean, sure, confidence. Yeah, that plays into it. Whether, you know, that self-doubt comes in there. I'm human. You know, my friends would say I'm sensitive. So that definitely does play into it. But there was one theme that continuously rings true, which is that I was always helping sellers. And that's where I started to say, okay, there's value. I mean, there's a lot of consultants out there. There's a lot of, services out there for these Amazon sellers, because there's a lot of money in this space.
Right.
And so, and there are some that are in it for the money. And I got in this not because of the money. I got in this because I really want to continue to help selling sellers, or help sellers sell and help them deal with the different challenges of the marketplace, whether it's, you know, an Amazon issue with their account, or they need somebody to help escalate things. That's really what got me into it. And so that's where it comes back to. That's where that confidence is. And sure, I do need to charge for my time, because there is a lot of value in that. But really comes down to helping them do and be successful in the marketplace.
I think the biggest thing that you've got to do, Peter, is make sure you follow through for people. That's the biggest complaint I get. It's not about the money. People are always willing to buy time, right? You have this knowledge that took you all those years to get all that time. If you can help me and you can turn something around for me, I bought your time. That's worth it,
absolutely,
right? The problem is when I buy your time and then I never hear from you, or I never, that's the biggest complaint that I get from people. And every once in a while, I actually have to get involved, because I'd be like, wait, that person? No way. And I'll send them a note just like, hey, do you realize this? They're like, no. Most of the time, my experience is most of the time they're like, no, I have no clue. Because I haven't met the shysters. I'm sure they're out there. But generally, there's a lack of communication. But the fact that you have a service and you're giving it, I think that's the key, right? And so that seems to be working for you. I was blown away, again, with your talk, because you were, and I don't know, you're going to be at Rocky Mountain, and I want to make sure we put this out here, because Rocky Mountain Conference is upcoming. I snuck Peter in early because I wanted to make sure that they sold out the event. June 1st and 2nd.
June 2nd and 3rd.
2nd and 3rd. I'm sorry. We're there the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd.
Friday and Saturday.
So it's a Friday and a Saturday, and you are speaking, and I was hoping you were going to do the talk you gave at Resonate, because it was so strong, because your theory about knowing your ASIN right down to the levels, the same thing that I talk about a lot, which is, you know, we had to, in the pre-call, we were talking about this. If you're doing retail arbitrage, right, you're always going to hear go wide, not deep, right? If you're in wholesale private label, right, or wholesale bundling into private label, whatever you want to call that, really, mm-hmm. it's go deep, not wide, because you got to be very, you really want to manage those ASINs. And that was what you were all pitching was, I love sure. your head, torso, tail.
Yes.
I mean, it's a great example though, because you really need to know where your profits are coming from by ASIN level. That was your pitch. And I sat there like, all right, this guy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. It's 100%. And for private label and resellers in the wholesale space, you definitely need to know that. I also think, though, that arbitrage is not dead. I know there's a lot of people out there and a lot of things that are saying like, oh, it's going away. Amazon needs that selection. Amazon wants that selection. So it's not going away. These new tools that they're introducing will make it challenging, but they're not tools intended to stop arbitrage from occurring.
Well, wait, so stop there a second. There are tools. Yeah. Why are those tools there? I get you. You're right. They're not to stop arbitrage. What are they trying to stop?
They're trying to stop bad customer experiences.
Okay.
So if you're an arbitrage seller, take a deep breath. You're not going anywhere. But if you're doing it poorly, you need to fix that.
You're going somewhere then, right? You're going, you're suspended. Exactly. You're not coming back.
Right. Exactly. And so the talk I gave at Resonates was really about understanding your catalog and knowing where your money is and where your money's coming from. So your catalog is really divided into three sections, which is the head, the torso, and the tail. And the head selection is the most important. It's the fastest selling. It's driving the most revenue. It may not be driving the most profitability, but it is certainly the one that's driving the greatest amount of sales. It's the smallest portion of your catalog. It's usually like that 10 to 20%.
Well, you said it might not be your most profitable, but wouldn't it make sense that you tried to make it more profitable because it's the most revenue, right? Isn't that the Absolutely. Place you work to optimize if you continue to work down the touch points, anything you can do to make it sharper?
Sure. It depends. If you're a private label seller, then yeah, you're going to see that level of profit because you can control the price point and your buy points and your COGS, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a reseller and if you've got competition on your ASIN, then it may not be as profitable because the competition goes deep. And to compete for the buy box, the price continues to drop. And so you may see smaller profitability around that.
Okay,
but it could be an incredibly popular product. So, you know, a Star Wars Lego toy, for example, you're getting it from wholesale, and then there's also 10 sellers who are getting it through arbitrage, and it's the most popular Lego toy out there right now. And so, you may buy it at a particular point, and that's why I was talking about how you need to have a profit strategy where you know your profit range is going to be between, say, 10%, you know, to 100, right? But then you have that floor and you say, okay, you know what? I'm no longer making 10% profit on this product anymore. So I think I'm going to stop selling it.
And how do you do that? So I think it's genius. So you're saying, Steve, when you sell this product, realize that it's going to go anywhere from 10 to, you might get it up to 50. And the example you gave at Resonate was up to 50%. Mm-hmm. And that's when times are really good. You just happen to fall into the right buy or your competitor ran out of stock. And so therefore the mm-hmm. price went back up, whatever it was that caused you for that range. You're saying put some kind of stopgap in place to identify that when it drops below there and it stays there, right? That's probably the point you got to exit. That's a hard thing to do, isn't it? Because I think a lot of us get a little romantic with our products and they're like, wait, that's mine. Huh? That was me. That was Steve.
Yeah. And it's my money.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. The parallels between the marketplace, selling on the Amazon marketplace and the stock market are so similar.
Hmm.
And you're right. You put that stopgap floor price in there. And the thing is, though, is you've got to create a strategy first. And then there are going to be scenarios where that strategy, you alter it a little bit.
Right.
So, you know, maybe you sit on something. But I think you've got to recognize, you've got to have that strategy in place because the reality of what we're doing by selling on Amazon, the most important thing is cash flow. You have to have money to continue to buy inventory. If you don't have money, you can't buy more inventory. And so if you're buying products that aren't generating profit, then you're basically chasing your tail.
Right.
Because you're not generating any more money to continue to expand your catalog. So how are you doing it? You're just buying the same product over and over again, making the same money, and you're just, it's the same kind of repetitive cycle, and you're not able to grow.
And some dip in the market, you're done. You're gone, right? Something outside of your control will change, and let's face it, it will change. And when you're that exposed for that length of time and you don't have a strategy, I love it what you're saying. So have a strategy. Not only know your profitability, which is what I pitch for every product, you're saying make sure every single product has a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Buy product. Love it.
And if your catalog gets too big, then you need to break it up into cohorts and look at particular categories, make sure that the category is performing at a particular level, and then dive deep into those categories and understand the ASINs from that perspective.
And dive deep. That's such different advice than go wide, go wide. That advice is different. It's different today, though, isn't it? I say, and this is, you're going to be like, duh, Steve, the technology is getting so advanced, right? The data we can scrape and get together very quickly, and others can do it even quicker than us, really helps drive a lot of decisions, or it should.
Yeah, the data is really important. When I say dive deep, it's not specific to the catalog in terms of having a wide or deep catalog. It's diving into the data around your catalog and understanding what's going there. So literally pulling back every layer of that onion, getting as granular as you can to know exactly what's happening with your SKUs.
Hmm. Man, I can't wait. So Rocky Mountain Conference, June 2nd. You know what? I mean, it's exciting because these are the conversations that everybody really wants to have. They just don't know where to turn. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard. You know, that was the thing about Resonate. That was an amazing conference. They were some deep, deep, deep conversations.
Sure.
And it was very exciting to see people get excited about this stuff. I mean, it really is. I'm very, very excited. All right. So tell me about peterkearns.com. So Peter Kearns, I'm going to let you pitch. I don't benefit anyone. I don't benefit in any way anybody. Don't think I do. I don't. I just like Peter and I like what he has to say. And I like the fact that there's somebody out there who understands this stuff, who's willing to sell his services to you if that's what you need. And if this is something, if this resonates well with you, then this is a good guy to go to. So tell me about what you're doing. So you've got a sales and catalog audit. What's that mean?
Yeah, so basically the sales and catalog audit, what we just talked about was diving into your catalog.
So you can help me do that.
Yeah, not only with that, not only with what's happening with your catalog, but also what's going on with your listings. So there are a lot of sellers that are either matching to existing listings, or if you're private label and you're creating your own listings, you'd be surprised. There's probably some policy violations in your listings. And so what I like to do is talk to you about that so that you know what they are, and then you can make a decision if you want to change that. Because there's the Amazon playbook. I mean, Amazon is very rigid. Here are the terms of service. This is a style guide for the title. This is exactly how a title should be. But does that mean that the title is then going to convert the best way that you need it to be? Or are there things that you can put in the title that will help surface the product a little bit better? Sure. Are those a violation of service? Possibly. It could be considered title stuffing. Do you know that? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But I think it's really important for you to make that determination to understand where those where that line is, if you will, with that.
Because it's a risk. There's a risk there, and you need to know it. Right, you need to know
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. So that's what that kind of catalog audit is let's look at what your business is doing. Let's look at your ASINs, how they're performing. Let's look at great performing ASINs. Let's look at ASINs that have opportunity for improvement with, you know, maybe driving sponsored products or improving detail page contributions so that you can actually see a higher conversion. And then looking at the detail pages to make sure you're not violating anything. And then also we look at what policy notices you've gotten and do you need to be worried? How can you respond? What kind of operational changes do you need to make sure that you're doing it the Amazon way and you stop seeing those policy violations coming through?
Well, one of the things you talked about earlier too was communicating with Amazon. That is very interesting to me because there's a way to, I mean, there's sometimes you send to certain departments, you send stuff, you never hear anything. It's gone. It's like, hello, hello, anybody? Nobody.
Yeah.
So there are ways to deal with that stuff, right?
There are. There's definitely a language spoke at Amazon. And there are times when, you know, sellers aren't being treated poorly because that's what Amazon's trying to do. Amazon's just really big. They've got over 2 million third-party sellers. and they've got to automate it, a lot of stuff. And so that's usually what the problem is that it's automated or it's in some sort of queue and it just doesn't get to it right away. It's nothing other than that. But there are ways to communicate with Amazon to get their attention, to get them to take notice of what you're doing and respond. A lot of the stuff, a lot of the communication that I've seen over the years with sellers is that it fails to address the root cause of what Amazon's asking about. They may be asking about XYZ, but you just spent three paragraphs explaining 1, 2, 3.
That's a Mars-Venus thing, right?
Totally, totally. And so I work with a lot of sellers. You know, if somebody gets an ASIN reinstate or needs an ASIN reinstatement or needs an account reinstatement, I'll do that. But then I like to work with them in a manner that can train them so that they know how to communicate with Amazon on a regular basis.
Right.
And they can do it. I mean, one client that I've worked with for almost a year and a half now, you know, they get ASIN suspended a lot, not because of anything except for algorithm false positives. And so I've trained them and got them up to the point where they can write a POA in, you know, 25 minutes and submit it, and their ASINs back up within the hour. So it's really, you really got to know how to speak Amazonian, if you will.
The other one that interested me, and this, it's just funny, just talking about it, it's just like this whole other country. Brand strategy and management, that's also interesting to me, because ultimately, mm-hmm. you know, why is somebody developing a private label brand, right? They love it. They love making garlic presses, right? That's their whole goal in life. I don't think so. I don't think that family business was that and went up. I tend to believe that they're trying to create a brand that ultimately they want to bring out to market and sell or something like that, right? And so sure. That's where you concentrate?
So there's two areas of brand strategy that I look at. And there's the brands that are being developed for Amazon. So that's really popular right now. And I see that the marketplace is definitely pivoting, where you're seeing these sellers who had success either through arbitrage or, you know, maybe sourcing through liquidation, or they've been a reseller and they just decided, you know, the competition is so fierce, or they're losing, access to inventory because the brands aren't selling to distributors anymore, or the brands are going direct. And so you're seeing these businesses create Amazon brands, if you will, where they're creating the brand on Amazon and they're going through their own URL or they're going just through the marketplace. And so those brands need a strategy. They need to understand how to create detail pages that resonate with the Amazon customer, how they can convert better. And that's that kind of Amazon brand strategy. Then there's also the Amazon brand strategy where you are a existing, you know, brand, something that you'd buy on Amazon, maybe through retail, or buy it at Home Depot or buy it at Lowe's or Target. And you need to know what the heck is going on with your product. And you need a strategy for dealing with the marketplace. And, you know, maybe you've got a bunch of unauthorized sellers, or, you know, unfortunately, maybe there's some counterfeit going on. And so I work with a lot of brands on that perspective in terms of what's your brand strategy for the marketplace going to be? Because if you don't have one, you're in trouble.
You're in deep trouble.
You're in deep, deep trouble. And your brand strategy could be, we're not going to sell our products on Amazon, but you still need to know what that means. And you still need to have a presence in some way, shape, or form to stop people from buying your product and turning around and selling it on the Amazon marketplace.
Brand registry 2.0 is a perfect example, right? Where brands are dealing with this, and we're going to see a pretty big tightening. I don't know how long it'll last, but there's definitely a change afoot. And I'm seeing that more and more brands are saying, whoa, I'm trying to get a control of my brand.
Yeah, absolutely. The brand registry 2.0 program that's rolling out, it either is out now or it's supposed to be out now, or, you know, I've heard different takes on its level of availability. But it is designed to help brands protect themselves on the marketplace, because, you know, the marketplace is fantastic. It gives customers the ability to buy these great products. It gives businesses the ability to sell to Amazon's customer base. It's also a bit problematic in that there's a little bit of this wild, wild west mentality out there. And so there needs to be some protections put in place so that these brands that spend millions of dollars, thousands or millions of dollars building up this amazing brand, they need to be able to protect it. And so that's what this brand registry 2.0 is.
It's reasonable. Yeah, it's very reasonable. Absolutely. You know, I mean, ultimately, I want to buy things and sell them, make a profit. Amazon wants people to buy things and be happy, right? And they want to make a profit. So, I mean, ultimately, if you know, it's the pain of change. I mean, for me, you know, I think about, you know, we've been FBA since 2011. It's night and day today from what it was in just 6 years, night and day. So think about, I've had some people on that were back in 2008, and it's, I mean, it's not even the same planet. I mean, it's just completely different. So one thing's for sure, I mean, Peter, it will change tomorrow, won't it?
Yeah, it's constantly changing. And that's the fun part, though. It's really exciting. And it's great for businesses in the sense that the change will either make you stronger or make you get out. And for the ones that decide to stay and that make you stronger, it's just great for your business. And the ones that decide to get out, hopefully you've learned something and you're able to pivot and transition to something new. But yeah, you know, the marketplace is not going anywhere.
I don't have a problem with the brand walking away saying, you know what, this just isn't for me. I respect that. At least they know it and they made a choice and they're going to do their way the way they want. But it is not a set it and forget it. I mean, it is not. It's evolving. I mean, to be fair, it's evolving so quickly. I don't think anybody can really say, hey, this is the way it's going to be, because it's not going to be that way, because it just can't.
Yeah, I think the CEO of Gap said something last year or the year before, like, you can't ignore the Amazon marketplace anymore.
Mm. That's a big deal, because they closed the Gap in my town. It's hilarious. Every time I go by it, it's a giant empty store. It's been empty forever. And I think, man, you know, my kid bought all his clothes there. Not anymore. He's buying them online. And doesn't even try them on. He just orders what he wants and boom, it just shows up and I got to pay for it. I don't like that, but.
I think that the days of those big stores like that are coming to an end. I mean, I think you're going to see these smaller niche brands over the next few years really start to take off, and they'll go direct through their own website. They'll go direct through the, you know, the marketplaces, Amazon, hopefully Walmart and Jet can and eBay can really, you know, establish footing and compete and give customers the opportunity to buy products from there and have a great experience as well. And then I think these brands, instead of going, you know, big box stores or big retail stores, they're going to do really creative things like, you know, specific exclusive agreements with different types of companies to get their products in front of customers. I'm excited for the day where you see, you know, an Amazon brand, so a brand that was created specifically to sell on the Amazon marketplace, goes out and secures some sort of celebrity or athlete endorsement, you know, some kind of really cool shoe company that goes directly to the Amazon marketplace, that doesn't go, you know, big box store, and then you get, you know, the number one draft pick from the NFL who signs on, and they're going to be, you know, they're going to wear that branded shoe. I mean, I don't think that that's far off.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, what it fascinates me whenever I watch Shark Tank and I see people, you know, they talk about their e-commerce sales. It's always almost led by Amazon. Oh, we're on Amazon, period. I mean, that's like an established thing. And it's so funny to see how strong they are, because you know that's 90% of their sales. They can have their own website all they want, but it's almost all coming from there. Fascinating.
There's still, even though 90% of the sales are coming from Amazon, there's still some really cool things that you can do on your own website to differentiate yourself and create good customer experiences.
Oh, so that's in your little...
Don't give up on your website.
That's in your back pocket too?
I coach on that. Absolutely.
Okay. Good. Yeah. So you're going to be at Rocky Mountain June 2nd and 3rd, and it happens to be your birthday. So I'm just going to put that out there.
It does. Yeah. June 2nd is my birthday. I'm excited. I hope there's a marching band.
Well, we'll all be celebrating it. Just so you know, the birthday boy buys the beer. So just it's a rule. At least we're starting it this year. So peterkearns.com, pk@peterkearns.com. And I'll have links on my website for that. The goal of this podcast is to help people move forward. I think you've given a whole bunch of great tips. But there are people that are stuck. I want you to give me one, not too long, that people can put into place in their business today, regardless of the size of their business.
So if you're stuck with your Amazon business, first thing you should do is go to your business reports and look at your detail page sales and traffic by child item. Look at that report. The first column that you're going to pay attention to is the sessions. That's your traffic. And that's going to be the key, right? Is your ASIN getting any traffic? That's the first thing you're going to start to look at. And if your business is stuck, I would suspect that it's because you're not getting any traffic. And if you're getting great, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm going to say is that if you're getting traffic and it's not selling, then it's a different issue.
Yeah, then it's maybe there's something wrong with the detail page, or if you're private label, maybe your product isn't very good and you need to improve it.
Well, that hurts to hear.
It does. The reality of it is, though, is this is a competitive marketplace, and you need to rip the Band-Aid off, and you need to leave your emotions at the door when it comes to product creation. And if you're creating, you know, sorry, lack of a better word, if you're creating crappy products, people aren't going to buy them. And that's just that. And the thing is that you got to recognize that your competition is reading your 1- and 2-star reviews to see what you're doing wrong. And then they're making the improvements in their products. And then they're going to capitalize on the things that you're doing wrong to leverage traffic to their listing and drive sales to it from that perspective.
So smart. Okay. So peterkearns.com, PK at Peter Kearns. You can meet him in face and me at Rocky Mountain Conference in Denver, June 2nd and 3rd. Actually, I get in the 1st, so you can even meet me on the 1st. But it's June 2nd and 3rd.
I get in on the 1st also.
Oh, dude, now we could do a meetup, and I guarantee it'll involve adult beverages.
Let's do it.
Although, you know, the hard part about me going to Denver, and they always make fun of me, is I drink Miller Lite. I'm such a wuss. And it's like Denver's like the king of beer. And I'm like, really? I'm just, you know, they like look down at me and I'm okay with it. So so you can meet us June 1st, 2nd, or 3rd at this conference. Yeah. And I believe there are still tickets for sale. And again, I don't benefit in any way. I'm not selling tickets to benefit and get paid on them. I know it's such a great place. There's a couple hundred people going to be there. It is a great place to meet face to face with all these top sellers. You'll get to meet Peter Kearns, Andy Slammons, Leron Hirschkorn, Jeff Cohen will be there, the Wholesale Boys, Eddie Levine. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Travis Ross, Paul Witter. It is such a great opportunity. This is how you're going to grow your business right here, right? At the conference. You know, I think back to the one where you and I were at 2 weeks ago, the Resonate conference. I mean, that was an amazing time. I mean, I spent time with so many incredible people one-on-one. And you could talk about this stuff, and their eyes don't roll over in the back of their head like my wife and the rest of my family. Actually, people want to talk about it.
I think if you're on the fence, you should go.
Yeah.
It's really conferences, meeting people face to face, having these dialogues, building these relationships. It's really helpful, and I think it makes the difference in whether or not you're going to take your business to the next level. It's not that much money to invest in that sort of thing, and I think that the payoff is pretty significant.
Well, the key is, you just said it, it's an investment. It's not an expense. It's an investment. Man, I thank you so much. Wish you nothing but success. Take care. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
You. Okay, that sounds good. Thanks, everyone.
All right. I love this episode. I love that we now have a contact that we could reach out to that you're going to meet. If you go to that conference, you're going to meet him face to face, shake his hand, buy him a beer, hang out with him, get to know him, because that's how you, when the issues happen, and issues will happen, when you have somebody you can just say, hey, this happened. Should I be concerned about this? Should I do something else? That is so important to have that type of relationship. And this is the kind of guy you want to be with. So ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Last pitch, June 2nd and 3rd. I will be at the Rocky Mountain Conference in Denver. Going to be a great conference. A lot of great speakers. Paul Witter, Travis Ross put it on, and it's a great event. You're going to learn a lot. You're going to meet incredible people face-to-face, which is a big deal. Following week, I'm in Dayton, Ohio for Greg Murphy's Busproof Business Labs conference, and it's a book, massive book seller conference. And there are sellers that are just minor booksellers and tractor trailer load booksellers, and it's going to be a great event too. ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.